introduce yourself, please.
I'm Jason Kander. I'm the Missouri Secretary of State.
Very good. Let's get started.
This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go. And Statehouse Blend is underway with the Secretary of State. We're glad you're here, Jason Kander. This is where we get to know people who haunt the Statehouse. Usually, it's state representatives and senators we have in that chair, so it's nice to have a statewide elected official with us today. But you're going to start the same way they all do, which is to tell us, most importantly, about your kids and your pets.
Sure, thanks. So my son, True Kander, T-R-U-E, he'll be two this week.
Okay, now I'm going to have to stop you already. Mm-hmm. Why did you name your son True?
No, that's a great question. I get that question a lot, obviously.
I imagine.
For the longest time, we thought we were going to name our firstborn son. You know, we figured if we have a son, we would name him Truman. We thought that for a long time. And then when my wife was pregnant, we started to talk about that more when we found out we were having a boy.
Uh-huh.
And we talked about it, and we thought, you know, back when we always said that, I wasn't doing what I'm doing now. And we just thought about it and decided that if we named him that, it would be sort of like telling him that there was some specific vocation we wanted him to go into. And that's not the case at all.
Predisposing your son to politics is
not
dangerous.
What I wanted to do at all. Yeah. And so we actually decided to go in a completely different direction. We ended up naming him after the quote from Hamlet, "To thine own self be true."
Oh.
And so we felt like that was the completely other way to go, so that we could always, you know, tell him that there was no expectation for what he would do in a career. We just wanted him to be happy. And so we really like the name.
I dare say that is the best "tell us about your child" answer we've ever had on Statehouse Blend.
Well, that's because I have the best child.
Well, there you go. Now we're going to have fights. Send your emails to Secretary of State Jason Kander. And any pets?
Yeah, we have two dogs, Winston and Shelby.
Okay, very good. As in Winston Churchill?
Actually, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he's Winston Churchill Kander.
Fair enough. And tell us how you first got involved or hooked on politics.
So, you know, I was always, interested in public service growing up. I didn't really know exactly what I was going to do, but I grew up in a home that was very public service oriented. My parents were juvenile probation officers. My dad was a police officer at night. And they just sort of taught us that, you know, you have to do what you believe is right and that that's not always the same as what's easy. And then when 9/11 happened, I joined the Army and was in the Army National Guard. I was in an infantry unit and then Army Reserve as an intelligence officer in the Army. Went over to Afghanistan, and my experience in Afghanistan was really the first time in my life that I had been on the receiving end of decisions made by people in public office that had a major impact on my life. And so to me, that just really opened my eyes. There was a lot that I saw that I didn't like about that. For instance, you know, not having the right equipment at times, not having armored vehicles, and feeling like a lot of that was because there was so much of an emphasis put on and a priority by those politicians at the time put on Iraq and not on Afghanistan at all, which I thought was wrong. I came home and I saw things like the Medicaid cuts at the time and that sort of thing. And to me, it looked like the same sort of problem. And so I decided to run for the State House from here in Kansas City.
And you've been in office pretty much ever since.
Right. So, yeah, I was elected in 2008 and then reelected in 2010 and then elected Secretary of State in 2012.
Very good. We are not here just the two of us alone, but we also have, as always, our citizen guest, Nick Schultz, who lives in Brookside. He's a doctoral student in social work. Welcome to you, Nick.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And also the host of KCUR's Up to Date, my friend Steve Kraske.
Hi, Brian.
Good to see you. We have a lot to talk about, Jason. We have questions about, well, you know, what the Secretary of State does and things like that. But let's go around the table first. Nick Schultz, what would you say or ask of Secretary of State Jason Kander?
Well, I had a couple of questions. But first, on my mind in terms of Missouri issues and Missouri politics, involves Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of touches on my research interest in the doctoral program. But what are your thoughts on how we can ensure health for Missouri's citizens?
So I think Medicaid expansion is quite clearly something we need to do in Missouri. One of the ways I put it is that when you look at the numbers, when the fact that the federal government is going to cover 96% of the cost, and it's out of taxes that Missourians are currently paying, it's not as if they're not going to pay those federal taxes if you don't have Medicaid. I mean, they're going to pay it, and it's going to pay for Medicaid expansion in Iowa and Illinois and places like that. So I believe it's something Missouri should do. And when you talk about it that way, it's 96% of the funding comes from the federal government in taxes we already pay. It is the best deal that Missouri has seen since the federal government bought us from France for 3 cents an acre. It is a complete and total no-brainer. And what has happened is it's been caught up in politics in Jefferson City. And not even, I mean, partisan politics is technically the way to refer to it, but not partisan in the sense that it's both sides of the aisle politics. I believe it is Republican politicians who are afraid of having somebody get to their right on the issue, and so they won't move on it. And honestly, I think that's really cynical. I think it's a morally bankrupt reason to deny health care to your constituents. And I'm hopeful that we continue to move forward on it. I mean, everybody you talk to, when you get outside of Jefferson City, when you get outside of the state capitol building, really, all across the state, people are in favor of this because it makes sense. I mean, you look at, you know, John Kasich is considered a very possible person to get the Republican nomination for president, and I believe he expanded Medicaid in his state. So it's not as if it's an extreme idea. So it's very frustrating.
Right.
Yeah, and Nick is nodding his head. He seems to think it's frustrating, too. Steve Kraske.
You know, I was wondering, Jason, about the culture in the State House. There's been so much talk, based on some stories that we've done at the Star, about, you know, interns and sexual harassment and sort of just the whole culture of the building. You know, a lot of folks like yourself who favor ethics reform in the building, and you've worked on that for a number of years, say there's a connection between ethics reform and improving the culture in the building. Explain that to me. What is the connection?
I just think that so much of what comes out of Jefferson City that is embarrassing is a symptom of the fact that we have the worst campaign finance and ethics laws in the country. And, you know, I just don't see how you get around that. You can't absolve people of responsibility for that. I mean, it certainly doesn't absolve any of the behavior that you mentioned, and you can't say, well, it's because of this. I just can't get my mind around the idea that it's not related. I mean, it's at the end of the day, when folks feel like there are no consequences for their actions, then you get actions in a wide variety of different areas that you don't approve of.
And so when there's aren't many restrictions on lawmakers and how they raise money and what they do, that just what breeds a culture that's sort of loosey-goosey? Is that sort of what you're...
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of folks who have grown to believe that they just can do whatever they want. And and a lot of that has to do with the fact that there just aren't very many consequences for their official behavior. And so there's a bit of, I guess, an entitlement. I mean, I think it was Senator John Lamping who referred to it as sort of a, I believe he said it was like a conference atmosphere. And I thought that was sort of an insightful way to say it.
And what happens here stays here sort of attitude.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, I actually, you know, you and I have talked about this for years, and I've come to the point now where I think it's much larger than just campaign finance and ethics reform. I actually think that we spend, and this is not just in the state, nationally, I think we spend a lot of time, understandably, talking about and focusing on who we elect. And I think that's important, but I think we really miss out on another issue, which is how we elect people in this country. And I think that money in politics and reforms are obviously an important, very important part of that. But I've come to believe that there's a couple other areas that people have to talk about. And that is how we do primaries in this country. I mean, the fact that most places, you know, Missouri technically has what you can sort of refer to as an open primary because you go in and you can request either, you know, any party's ballot. But it's not really a true open primary. I mean, there are states that are doing real open primaries now, which are where you go in and in your August or whenever you have the primary on the August ballot, there's candidates from every party on that ballot. You vote, it gets narrowed down to two, and then you have in the general election, if it's a heavily Democratic or heavily Republican area, you could have two candidates from the same party on that ballot. But that means that those candidates are going to have to be accountable to a much wider group of voters, right? Because the general election is going to have a lot more people vote in it. It means that if they come from a district that is very heavily one party, they can't discount the people who are more of the other party or of independent, because they're still going to see those voters in the general election, and that general election will have much more to do with who wins. And then finally, redistricting reform. I mean, we don't let inmates serve on juries, but we let legislators draw districts. And I don't think that makes any sense at all, right? It's crazy.
You just compared legislators to inmates, but that's fine. You were one once.
I was not misquoted.
Well, I guess the question that sort of begs for me is, you are the Secretary of State. Elections are under your purview. What sort of power do you have to actually address that, to do anything about it, and why isn't it fixed yet?
Why it's not fixed yet? You know, I'm doing everything that I can, to be honest with you. And my role here, in addition to, you know, I'm the chief election official of the state, so, and I'm very proud of a lot of the things that we've done there in that role. But a lot of this is the same thing that I've tried to do on this issue when I was in the state legislature, and that's, it's a bully pulpit. It's move the national conversation, or in this case, the state conversation, in that direction. And when I was in the state house, when I first got into the state house, you know, obviously ethics reform, campaign reform, it's not what you would refer to as a bread and butter issue. It's not the things that people talk about all the time. But I'm a really big believer in the idea that when you get a system right, you're going to get better policy output on every other issue. So I talked about this all the time in my first campaign for the legislature, and in my second campaign, and all my town halls. And I was really proud of the fact that by the time I was toward the end of my last term in the House, when I would get stopped in the grocery store by constituents, or when I do a town hall, it was one of the first things people asked about. And I found that by making sure to ring this bell as much as I can as Secretary of State, I'm finding that that's the case as I go around the state now. And that's, I think, a big part of my role in this. At the end of the day, what we need on these issues is leadership. And you need more people who will step up and say, no, this is broken.
You know, it's interesting. Your peer across the state line, Chris Kobach, on the Kansas side, would say, for him, election reform is a bread and butter issue. He's particularly concerned about voter fraud. I don't hear you talk much about voter fraud. Do you feel like that's a problem in Missouri? How is your approach to these election issues different from his?
Well, I'm very focused, obviously, on the campaign process, on lobbying, on that sort of thing, in terms of cleaning that up. But I also am very proud of our record on these issues, in the sense that, look, I set up the Election Integrity Unit in the Secretary of State's office. We never had one before. We have done more formal investigations into election law, potential election law violations, than any Secretary of State in Missouri history. But what Secretary Kobach seems to be focused on, and why he constantly talks about photo identification laws, and he's focused on voter impersonation fraud, which, you know, I can't speak for Kansas. We've never had a reported case of voter impersonation fraud in the state of Missouri. But, you know, I have zero tolerance for fraud of any kind. And there's a couple of people in Kansas City who, as partial result of an investigation by our office, who will never be able to vote again because they're convicted of a felony. And there's other things that you've probably read about, what we've done on signature fraud on petitions and that sort of thing. So I've been very active on that. But here's the difference between me and Secretary Kobach. I think that as a chief election official, you have two very important responsibilities. And I think he maybe only agrees with half of this. You have to make sure that only eligible voters vote. Probably we agree on that. And you have to make sure that every eligible voter has the opportunity to vote. I'm not sure we agree on that. And I think that both those responsibilities are really important.
Nick Schultz, you're here as a citizen. When you hear the secretary talk about that approach to election fraud, how does that strike you? Does it work for you?
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that approach. From what I understand, the numbers on like the actual cases of election fraud don't really sound like it's something that we really need to look at in terms of like actual identification. I appreciate your approach and definitely agree.
I think it's, you know, you have to have zero tolerance fraud. You have to work very, very hard to make sure that there isn't any. But you also have to make sure that you are focused on actually preventing what is most likely to happen. And so my focus is on making sure that we don't have any instances of fraud, and that if there is an instance, that it is punished, and that you take quick action. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that, you know, Secretary Kobach is maybe more focused on an ideological pursuit.
That's my impression too.
Steve, what else is on your mind today?
You know, I just was wondering, Jason, you know, as a reporter, I still get, you know, all the emails from your office, and it seems like there are so many petitions circulating around the state of Missouri right now to get issues on the ballot next year, probably in August or November of 2016. I'm just wondering, how many petitions are circulating out there right now? How long might the ballot be in November 2016 when Missourians are looking to vote for the president of the United States? How many other issues will they also be looking at on that ballot?
It's very hard to say. I mean, it's about, you know, it's about the same as the last few years in terms of how many are being submitted. But it's hard to say because for us, until we get to the very beginning of May, when folks come in and actually turn in signatures, we don't really know. I mean, so last year you had, you know, dozens of them submitted, and then, you know, two actually turned in signatures, and one of them had enough valid signatures to make the ballot. So it's not an easy process to get on the ballot. Obviously, you have to get a lot of signatures around the state, and you have to do it in, you know,
it's so many by every congressional district.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So it's not as if you can just go to a really, really, you know, heavily densely populated area and stand outside a grocery store until you get there. It's you got to go to all parts of the state to do it. So, you know, we'll see. I think what it points to, though, and I've said this for a while, that it demonstrates that there is a trend, unmistakable trend, in Missouri, which is that folks are maybe frustrated with the legislative process. And as a result, you're seeing a lot more attempts to make policy and sort of set the direction of the state through the initiative petition process.
Yeah, a lot of the petitions have to do with what campaign finance reform and putting a limit back on the amount and the size of donations that citizens can make to politicians. What are some of the other topics that are bouncing around out there?
So you have issues like you know, medicinal marijuana. You have issues like minimum wage, and then there's always different tax issues. So interestingly, the topics don't necessarily, you don't get a whole different set of topics from election cycle to election cycle, but you know, sometimes the petitions themselves do change. But yeah, there's definitely certain groups out there who've decided that they have certain causes they want to pursue, and the ballot is the way that they are going about it.
So the great number of petition that are out there, people collecting signatures, that may not necessarily translate to a really long ballot next November.
It really just depends on the level of success the different groups have in seeking signatures.
Yeah.
Nick, I want to see if you have any other questions for Jason Kander. But Jason, if you don't mind, could you get me a little more coffee? You're a little closer.
Sure, no problem.
I really appreciate it. Go ahead, Nick.
So we were talking about elections, and I just was wanting to ask if you how you intend on reaching ethnic minorities in the light of events like what happened in Ferguson. What can we do to promote and support ethnic minorities in Missouri?
So I think that this, whether you're talking about minority populations or you know, for instance, maybe more rural or urban part of the state, depending on where you're from, and to me, this just sort of goes to one of my kind of rules of being in public service, which is I feel like there are an awful lot of people in public service who, for whatever reason, feel like they can't go to a place or address an issue until they have the answers. And that's always been sort of confounding to me because I don't see how they get the answers if you don't go there and talk to people. And so, for instance, what I've done in Ferguson is, you know, within a few days of when this all started back in a little over a year ago, I went there and I just talked to a lot of people and I asked a lot of questions, and I've continually done that. I was there yesterday. I spend a lot of time there because, and I don't have all the answers. But the more time I spend there, the more I know.
How does that fit in?
I'll be there later today.
Sorry to interrupt. How does that fit in with the work of Secretary of State? Because you have spent a lot of time there. You tweet from there pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. You've got this Ferguson rebuild effort. How does that fit in with the Secretary's job?
So when this all really started last year, I probably felt like a lot of people, whether they're in office or not, just frustrated in the sense that you want to do something. You want to try to help the situation. And the Secretary of State's office, you know, I'm the chief election official, chief record keeper for the state, chief securities regulator. There's obviously not a natural fit there. But I wanted to do everything I could, because those are my constituents, to help identify a problem we could help solve, right? Well, one of the things we do is business registration, and we work a lot with businesses around the state. And the more time I spent there, and the more I talked to small business owners and to others, to the mayor of Delwood, for instance, and Delwood is right next door to Ferguson and was very much affected as well, the more I came to realize that one of the worst things that could happen going forward in the long term would be if we didn't successfully get some of the small businesses or as many as the small businesses as possible that were damaged or destroyed or otherwise to come back into that main strip along West Florissant, for instance. Because while you have a national conversation that has started out of the events in Ferguson, you still have 72 businesses that were damaged or destroyed or vandalized. And it's very hard for a community to rebuild and to get going again when you have that situation. And so what I looked at that and found that, okay, there were zero interest loans that were being offered by government. And a lot of business owners were saying, hey, look, I took out debt in order to start my business in the first place. It's a lot, even at zero interest, it's a lot to ask of me to take on more debt to reopen in a place that's had what's happened in Ferguson happen. And there was no grant program at the county or state level. And so what we did is I worked with the business community in St. Louis, and we also got help from around the country because we did a crowdfunding campaign. And we did this thing, which we called hashtag Ferguson Rebuild. And what it was to try and help provide grants to incentivize businesses to come back. And that's, you know, we hit our goal. It's been, you know, it's not a cure-all by any stretch, but I'm proud of what we've done there. And I believe it's starting to make an impact.
So we're here today mostly to talk about your work as Secretary of State, mm-hmm. but you are a candidate for the United States Senate. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how that works for you as a statewide elected official. You have a job. You have a full-time job as mm-hmm. Secretary of State. You're also campaigning for a significant office. Mm-hmm. How do you hold those two together? Does running for the Senate cut into your work as Secretary?
No, I'm able to continue to do the work. You know, when I was in the legislature, for instance, I was a legislator. I was still a soldier. I was also an attorney. So I'm pretty accustomed to balancing
You're a multitasker.
Responsibilities. Yeah, and I'm a dad and a husband and I'm a huge Royals fan, which obviously takes up some time. You know,
got like 28% of the vote just for that. So.
Well, you know, I mean, when they play, we were talking on the way here. I mean, when they play on the West Coast, you lose some sleep. I mean, you end up staying up. So, but yeah, I've been really pleased with being able to keep up with all those responsibilities.
I know you have a flight to catch. You're going off to St. Louis today, right? Mm-hmm, yeah. Kraske here has a flight to catch.
My wife does.
Oh, his wife does.
I'm not
okay.
going anywhere.
All right,
I wish I was.
Yeah. I have a flight to catch. Nick, are you going anywhere today?
No, I'm staying.
No. Okay, well, thanks to our guest, Nick Schultz from Brookside, who is our citizen today. Thanks for being here, Nick.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And thanks to you, my friend of The Star and of UpToDate, Steve Kraske.
You bet, Brian.
Jason, in an effort to get to know you just a little bit better, we always close the show mm-hmm. by asking our guest his favorite song and what song will play us out. So what is your favorite song?
Really? All right, this is going to be more obscure, so you have to find it.
Okay, well, our producer, Matt Hodapp, can find any song.
Okay.
He's never found one he hasn't been able to find.
My favorite song is a song called I'm Coming Home by Robert Earl Keane.
And why that one?
Because I feel like I spend between the Army and then going away for college and then coming back and then the legislature and then campaigning, I feel like 90% of my life is about trying to get back to my house and get back to my wife and my son. And so that song has just always spoken to me, and I'm a really, really big Robert Earl Keane fan.
Outstanding. Well, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much.
Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can find us on iTunes or on kcur.org/statehouseblend. If you do use Twitter, that's a good way to keep track of the show, as well as the news from Jeff City and Topeka. You can follow me. I'm at PTSBrian. You can also follow my co-host, Sam Zeff. He's at Sam Zeff. We also try to use the hashtag StatehouseBlend. You can find us again in abbreviated form, thanks to Steve Kraske, on Tuesday mornings at 11 on UpToDate. They make some space for us then. And finally, we do want you to come sit in our citizen chair where Nick sat today and help us get to know elected leaders in Kansas and Missouri. If that's something you want to do, shoot me an email. I'm at brian@kcur.org. I am Brian Ellison. We'll see you next time.
On a barbecue, there were people jamming to the all-night blues. Life is good out in Santa Cruz, but I'm coming home to you.